This is WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, and we're doing a deep dive on the education policy and funding in the recently adopted state budget. And to examine what was included, we're joined by Brian Fessler, Director of Government Relations for the New York State School Boards Association. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start with the headline, which is that the state increased its contribution for school aid by about $1.3 billion in this budget, raising its support to nearly $36 billion, with about $25 billion coming in the form of foundation aid, according to the governor's office. What do those numbers mean for districts in New York?
At a starting point, they are meaningfully better than what we saw the governor roll out with in January. You know, the governor's January proposal, I think, was challenging for a lot of districts, but also very surprising for districts. In this current school year that we're in, 23-24, it's the first year that we achieved full funding of foundation aid, you know, that nearly 20-year-old formula. And so I think a lot of districts were cautiously optimistic and hopeful that we would see full funding headed into 24-25. Obviously, the governor's proposal in January took a number of steps back from that full funding level for all districts. I think at the end of the day, you know, when the ink dried on the budget, we were pleased that we were able to avoid, I think, some of the most harmful aspects of the governor's proposal. But there are still about half the districts in the state that are going to see no increase in foundation aid, which is school districts' main operating aid that they receive from the state. So if you're a glass half full person, you know, there's plenty to be pleased with. If you're a glass half empty person, you could still find areas to identify that empty portion of the glass.
So should we think about the funding levels, given inflation and other cost demands, as essentially holding the status quo? Or are districts around the state going to have to ask their local tax base to pony up a little bit more due to the funding from the state?
I think the more the latter. So we have about half the districts in the state that are going to see no increases in foundation aid. You know, inflation is still pesky, you know, high threes, 4% or so. So zero state aid, a tax cap that limits property tax growth to about 2%, give or take, with some district specifics. For the other half of the districts in the state that are seeing an increase, you know, certainly better to be in that situation than flat state aid, I think. But ultimately, the budget agreed on kind of an arbitrary inflation factor. So instead of 4.1%, which is in current law, they settled on 2.8%, kind of a back and forth, a little bit better than what we saw the governor roll out with in January. But I think depending on the specific situation, the particular district, some are going to be in a more comfortable position and some are going to have to make some program and staffing decisions that may be challenging and that they had hoped they were not going to be in as we head into 24-25.
Well, the budget was adopted about 3 weeks into April, which means it was about 3 weeks late. So did that screw up the ability of school districts who were looking to incorporate accurate state aid figures into their finalized taxing and spending plans?
I think we got really close to that point. You know, for a school district, an April 1st budget, you know, is certainly nice. We always want the information as early as possible so that school districts, school boards, school administrators have as much time as possible to factor in those numbers. From a statutory standpoint, there are certain timelines that school districts have to meet in terms of budget adoption, sending out ballots to active duty service members, making sure information is published and relayed to the public in time. We managed to have an on-time or a state budget that allowed school districts to meet those statutory deadlines. Okay. But we heard from a lot of school boards, school board members that had their local budget adoption meeting that they essentially pushed back by a week or two, keeping fingers crossed for a budget that allowed them to adopt a local budget in time to meet those statutory deadlines. So it did have an impact, but we managed to avoid running past some of these really meaningful and impactful statutory deadlines.
Well, moving forward, what are your expectations for the state-commissioned study on how New York distributes foundation aid dollars, which will essentially be led by former state budget director Bob Megna?
I am curious to see how this is going to play out. We had been advocating for the past few years, along with our partners in the Educational Conference Board, advocating for a study to basically examine the foundation aid formula. You know, this is a good formula that was adopted in 2007, But in that 15, 20-year time period, there's changes to the educational environment. You know, even the best policies or programs, you know, need updating over time. So we had been rebuffed in those efforts, unfortunately. And I understand lawmakers and legislators, you know, want to kind of celebrate and recognize the achievement and full funding. But we knew we were going to get to the point that we're at now. You know, we knew that 2 or 3 years ago. So we had hoped to see a study led by or coordinated by the State Education Department. You know, I think given, you know, the expertise, resources, capacities, that was probably the most appropriate department or entity to coordinate a study. Obviously, as you said, you know, it's the Rockefeller Institute that it's going to be conducting that study. You know, I've already heard some worries from school board members about, as you said, you know, potential objectivity, you know, just given the various dynamics. I think we're going into it eyes wide open. You know, there are some smart people over there. And so we look forward to, you know, talking about the issues within the formula that we've been talking about for the past number of years, areas that need to be updated, informed. And we're going to hope for the best product, you know, come December 1st, I think, is when the budget requires the Rockefeller Institute study to be shared with the governor and legislative leaders.
Well, before we move on, I want to reintroduce you for listeners just joining us. This is the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Brian Fessler, Director of Government Relations for the New York State School Boards Association. So some of the push for a new formula is based on the idea that we've got all this outdated information, and once we plug in the correct numbers, it's going to show us that we're woefully underspending on school aid. The counter side of this, as has been raised by State Budget Director Blake Washington, is that any sort of intellectually honest review of the formula will show that there are some school districts that may be getting more than they need from the state. So how much faith do you have in an intellectually honest review of a foundation aid formula, which might result in some winners and losers? And if there's winners and losers, that means some politicians are going to be losers and they're not going to like that.
You know, that's always the concern with opening up, as you said, a $25 billion formula, right? And we understand that. You know, I think we want a good product and a good state policy that sets up school districts for a, you know, funding scenario and a funding future for the next, you know, however many generations of students to come. And so, you know, I know there were a lot of conversations about various enrollment levels and, you know, have districts had recent enrollment declines, historical enrollment declines, fund balance issues, whatever it may be. At the end of the day, we want an objective and comprehensive review of the formula because, to your point, you know, there are enough moving pieces, and that's intentional because there are a variety of different dynamics and scenarios that we want to make sure we're capturing in order to determine, you know, what levels of funding our districts and students should have. So just taking a look at this lever here or this lever here, you know, if you tweak that without taking a look at how the rest of the formula adjusts or does not, you know, then I think you're going to lead to outcomes that are inefficient and undesired. But if you take a look at the entirety and recognize enrollment may be changing here, but we have more English language learner students, or, you know, this district wealth factor may be going down, but we have, you know, greater student poverty levels. We want to make sure a formula takes a look at all of that so that, you know, from a school district level, but also a state policy level, we're getting, you know, the most objective and comprehensive outcome to set this up for the next number of years to come.
So while the bulk of state education aid comes in the form of foundation aid, New York does spend, I think, more than $12 billion by last count on other forms of education aid, including expense-based aid and the STAR program. Do you think those are areas that are ripe for reform now, or are you content with how those dollars are distributed?
You know, a little bit of both. You know, there are some areas of how school districts are reimbursed for facilities, capital projects, building, for example, you know, that haven't really been touched since the early 2000s, so a little bit more than 20 years. You know, there are areas here or there, tweaks that we're supportive of. But I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that structure makes sense. you know, kind of mandated costs or mandated obligations that school districts fulfill, whether it's provision of special education services, transportation, textbooks are a good example of the type of funding that's included in those categories. I think the structure of that makes sense as is right now, you know, but whether part of this foundation aid study or broader conversations that we may have with folks in this building, we're always interested and willing to, you know, point out different areas that we think, you know, are ripe for update or modernization.
Well, turning to another area of the budget, what, if anything, is in either the spending plan or the policy side of this budget that will alleviate some of the concerns that school leaders around the state have about their state-mandated transition to a zero-emission school bus fleet?
Yeah, there were a couple areas in the state budget that made small, I think, from our perspective, positive tweaks. The zero-emission bus transition requirement has really been top of mind for school board members and other school leaders really since it was first implemented a couple years ago. Those two areas, kind of getting into the wonky side, is just with how transportation aid is calculated. You know, just a minute ago, we talked about some of these expense-based or reimbursement aids. So school districts receive a portion of their cost back from the state. So for a bus purchase, they may receive, you know, 60 cents on the dollar for a bus purchase. There has been a concern with how different state grants and federal grants factor into that calculation. The Environmental Bond Act, we were very pleased, had $500 million in it to support the transition. But there was kind of a disincentive with the way that that Bond Act money was calculating or being used to calculate transportation aid. And so the budget, thankfully, we were pleased to see exclude those dollars, those Bond Act dollars, for the purposes of calculating transportation aid. The net effect of that is there is more state transportation aid to support the cost, the higher cost of those zero-emission buses. That's in the budget, we're pleased to see, and a little bit more of a formal direction in terms of state coordination for zero-emission bus questions and concerns. So that was something we have heard from school board members, you know, that there's just a lot of different offices and entities that have a hand in this, and there wasn't really much of a kind of centralized or structured organizing process or entity for these questions and concerns to flow into. And so this coordinates that in a little bit more of a formalized way through NYSERDA. Is this going to change the world with this transition? No, but I think these two pieces take meaningful positive steps to support school districts at a minimum, you know, meet this statutory requirement.
Well, you mentioned the $500 million that's in the Environmental Bond Act. Are we going to need to see additional investments in future state budgets for this transition, or is there an expectation that the state has done its part and the rest of the cost is going to be shouldered by school districts?
We are certainly hopeful and supportive for the state to provide additional funding. You know, there are various pots of money, the Bond Act, various federal programs, some other state grants. But at the end of the day, under the current pricing system, zero-emission buses cost about three times as much as a traditional combustible engine bus. You know, the state offsets part of that. There's Bond Act money, but it's still a meaningful net increase in cost for districts. The other wrinkle here that, you know, we're talking about with lawmakers more often now is with most technology that tends to buck inflation. You know, the cost of technology comes down. And so when this mandate was put into place, there was an assumption that those costs would begin to come down. What we've seen is the opposite so far. Over the past year, year and a half, there's been a 10 or 15% increase in cost under the state contract for these zero-emission buses. So not just did we know it was going to be costly, but we were hoping that would mitigate over time, but we've seen the opposite. So, you know, whether that means we have a change in the timeline or a change in, you know, the state financial support for these purchases, it's making a challenging situation even more challenging, I think, as we approach this first deadline, the 2027 deadline that says no school districts can buy traditional diesel engine buses after 2027.
Well, finally, we've spoken with the head of the New York State United Teachers about their effort to increase the retirement package benefits for state employees, public employees more broadly, hired over the last, I think, 14 years at this point. And while they didn't get the comprehensive overhaul they were looking for in this state budget, there are some measures in it that begin to make the retirement end of salary calculations a little more beneficial. And I'm curious how that language in the budget and this broader campaign impacts school boards around the state. Is this something that you guys are supportive of? Do you have concerns about it because it means additional costs? How do you think about it?
We did not take a formal position on some of the Tier 6 push.
We can be less formal here, Brian. You can be informal with me.
So when we were asked about it, and we were, basically said this is not something that we're pushing for. We are certainly concerned about the challenges associated with recruitment and retention of staff. And that's both on the instructional side in the classroom, but also the non-instructional side, civil service type employees, bus drivers that school districts, as a multi-thousand person entity, we need that staff on hand to support our operations. So our response was, we care about recruitment and retention. We think there are other ways, more effective ways, certainly more cost-effective ways to get at that issue. So ultimately, we didn't take a formal position on that. But I think we recognize that this will come with a cost, a permanent cost for both TRS, so Teachers Retirement System employees, and those non-instructional employees. You know, we've identified a number of civil service reforms that we think would allow school districts, local governments, and other public employers to better address the recruitment and retention issue. And we also continue to have conversations with our teacher colleagues and the State Education Department around different teacher certification ideas that might help increase the pipeline to address the recruitment side of teachers, to address some of those staff shortages, issues. So it's going to come with a cost. Ultimately, we did not meaningfully support or oppose those, but we've instead tried to focus on other areas that we think are more effective and certainly more cost effective.
Well, we've been speaking with Brian Fessler. He's the Director of Government Relations for the New York State School Boards Association. Brian, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Resorts World New York. With over 1 million square feet of space to play, relax, and celebrate, Resorts World New York City hosts more than 5 million visitors a year. That makes Resorts World a significant social and economic partner for local businesses and residents alike. Through its operations and outreach programs, Resorts World has generated more than $4 billion for the state educational system and 1,400 jobs for the people of Queens. More information at rwnewyork.com.